You're listening to the Scottish Football Forums podcast, the home of Scottish football banter.
Hi, welcome to the latest episode of Scottish Football Forums podcast. We're at season 13, episode 9. I'm John, and tonight joined by regulars Dave. How you doing?
Okay, mate. Hope you're well, John.
I am all good, all right. All good. Hope you are too. And then Josh, how are you?
All right, mate. Recovering for the weekend. And I've been off work with a bit of sickness. But other than that, doing all right. Looking forward to the international break.
Aye, back fighting fit. Get your voice in preparation for the games coming up. Try not to lose it before Friday. See what happens. Try and keep your top on. Not lose a top.
Can I guarantee anything?
No. And try not to ride a bike as well.
No, I've stopped doing that. Stopped doing that, Stephen, because I found out it is actually illegal to do that. And if you if you get done for drink biking, you'll end up getting like points in your license or something like that. So
points on your bike license.
No, somebody tell me, but I don't know how, actually, that is a great fucking shout, actually. What about somebody that doesn't have a driving licence? Oh, so whoever's told me that, it must be absolute bullshit.
Aye, they're just legally allowed to cycle a bike drunk. That's basically what it is if they don't have a driver's licence. Can't
exactly.
Do it.
That's going to be pushed. By the way, and I'll tell you something, I know, that was a fucking police that told me that.
No,
aye,
what does that tell you?
No, see, when I was younger, one of my mates used to always go out and he'd always have his bike, and I'm pretty sure like there was at least a couple of times I get pulled over by the police and I get put in the nick for being drunk and cycling. I don't get any charges or anything like that. So there you go. We have a returning guest who is usually on our Premiership specials, but we've got him on for the Scotland chat tonight. Ewan, how you doing?
I'm good, mate. Good, mate. Busy few weeks for myself. New job, new house. So, yeah, all mixed in with following West Lothian's finest football team and amongst it. But, yeah, busy. What about yourself, mate?
Aye, no busy times, actually. Yeah, I've actually started a new job myself not long ago as well. So, that's been all go. But at least chat about jobs and get onto the football chat. Be a bit more entertaining, I think, for the listeners. So we are recording this Monday evening, and we have Cyprus coming up on Friday. You going to it, Ewan?
I'm not, just because I moved into the new house last Friday, so kind of had to pick my battles, we'll put it that way. So bypassing the Cyprus game, I am doing the double header in October, so I'm booked up for Seville and Lille. So I'll definitely be making those trips. But yeah, I did Cyprus 4 years ago when Steve Clarke kind of first initially took the job. So it was when Christian McGinn scored the goals over there. So it was another one I was kind of, when the fixtures came out, I thought if I'm going to miss one of the games, I'd be more content missing that one because I've done the trip before. So, and fairly recently as well. So yeah, unfortunately not going, but I will be watching as you would expect.
Oh, it makes sense. And Josh, you're the same, aren't you? You've decided to give this one a miss
and
for future trips.
I'm giving this one a miss. I'm also a wee bit different to you, and so I'm doing Spain and probably Georgia, just depending on a couple of things. But missing this one because when the fixtures first came out, that's when we tend to book up. Or away trips and that. But when I looked at the fixture list and the schedule and all that, I didn't actually think that we would be basically qualifying if we win this. I thought that's why we booked Spain, because we thought, right, come kind of Spain, you know, the last kind of two or three games of the campaign will be qualifying possibly. But yeah, we didn't think it would be, well, if we're talking about, you know, we could qualify on Tuesday night against England in the friend, well, not against England, but while playing England, I wouldn't have picked Cyprus away as kind of one of the big ones, but hey, that's the game you play.
Aye. Right, let's look at the squad then, first of all. I think we'll do that, won't we?
Sure.
Right, start off in the goalkeeping position. So we've kind of spoken for long enough about the fact that we weren't going to have a keeper if Gordon ended up getting injured, retired, whatever. Angus Gunn's come in and he's just making international football look easy, isn't he?
Hi, exactly. What is it? One goal conceded in the four games so far, and I can't actually think of many big saves he's really had to make in the four games, but I think that's bigger testament to the guys in front of him. Actually, you know, the likes of Ryan Porteous have come in and again taken international football no bother. Jack Hendry, I think, has been magnificent in the games so far, and obviously Kieran Tierney as well, who's a pretty much a staple. But yeah, he's certainly making international football look very easy, but I think a lot of that is down to the guys in front of him as well.
And the good thing as well, from the kind of keeper point of view, Liam Kelly, Motherwell have a good start to the season. So if he did have to get called upon somehow for whatever reason, then he'd probably be more likely than Xander Clarke, I think, at the moment. Or do you think it'd be the other way around?
I would say Liam Kelly's probably the more likely, given that he's been in the squad for a lot longer than Xander Clarke has, probably. I think the first time he was called up was he going back to the Kazakhstan San Marino doubleheader under Alec McLeish, I think was the first time Liam got called up when he was at Livingston. So yeah, he's kind of been in and about the setup for a wee bit longer than Xander Clarke. But as you say, Motherwell have been in fantastic form. And he's been excellent since he kind of returned to Scottish football with Motherwell as well, I have to say.
The
Chris,
hang
if I
on.
could, sorry, John. I think the thing as well is that Liam Kelly is probably based on club form, but that's very relevant. But I think based on club form, I think Liam Kelly has been the better goalkeeper so far this season. Xander Clarke has been immune to the odd mistake here and there, not personally directed towards him, but more defensively from a Hearts perspective. But Xander Clarke has held a bit of accountability in his perspective with regards to mistakes in terms of goals conceded from a Hearts perspective. Now, Stuart Kettlewell has set up Motherwell extremely well defensively, and a part of that is down to Liam Kelly. Yes, defensively they've done very, very well, but look at Motherwell's team on paper. They're not the most defensively diligent side on paper. They don't have players who you look at and go, oh, they're extremely commanding. So I think a massive part of that is Liam Kelly, and that just shows you that probably alongside Craig Gordon, he's probably one, or if the best goalkeeper in Scotland just now.
Yeah, I
Yeah,
mean,
what were you going to say, Josh?
I tend, I mean, I think the thing about Liam Kelly's an interesting one because every player that's played with him, you know, rates him hugely. You know, they all say he's an outstanding goalkeeper. And he was highly thought of when he was at Rangers. And I was a wee bit disappointed that circumstances kind of went against him at Rangers. I think, I think, had it been Liam Kelly and not Ross McCrory in the summer there for Rangers, it might have been Liam Kelly that came in. I think what I'm getting at there is I think Liam Kelly, when he left Rangers, was a wee bit further ahead of where Ross McCrory is right now. And I think he might have been a natural successor to McGregor. However, that's not the situation. I do think he's probably playing below his level at Motherwell. Without too much kind of disrespect to Motherwell, I think he's a top class keeper. To my recollection, he isn't all that huge for a keeper.
He's
In
bigger
terms,
than you'd think, actually. Like, we had Liam Kelly on our podcast when he was at Livingston, his second spell when we'd got promoted to the top flight, and he's a lot bigger than you'd imagine. But having watched Liam on a regular basis for ourselves, what was that?
Is it 6 foot 1?
Yeah, I think round about that. But he's the biggest compliment I would give Liam is see as a communicator, as a goalkeeper. Obviously, at Livingston, there's no many fans, so you can hear every word the goalkeeper says. But the way he communicates with his back four, back three, is, I think, every player that I've spoke to that's played with Liam has kind of touched on that in terms of a goalkeeper. He almost talks you through the game. And I agree with you. I think at the time when he went back to Rangers after having his loan spell with us, I think had they came a bit later like Robbie McCrory has, I think he might have had a chance at Rangers are kind of coming in, as you say, for a successor to Alan McGregor, but it's just not worked out for him. But he's moved down south, he kind of was hit and miss at QPR, but coming back up here, he's been sensational for Motherwell. Certainly every Motherwell fan I've spoken to can't speak highly enough of him.
Well, I mean it shows you and how highly, because it was Mark Warburton that took him to QPR, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And that shows you how highly he rated him, you know, in terms of going down to England, taking on QPR, a decent-sized English championship team, and kind of one of the first things he goes for is to sign this kind of Rangers youth player from Scotland, albeit he wasn't a rip-roaring success down south, but he's doing really well up here. But Liam Kelly aside, it is Angus Gunn's jersey to lose. Like you said, he's only conceded, was it one goal?
One goal. It was a penalty in Norway,
yeah.
Wasn't it?
So. Yeah, so was I. Aye. So he's, I mean, so in a sense, we're yet to see the true measure of Gunn in terms of, you know, what can he really bring? Because he hasn't been tested a whole lot, probably down to the centre-backs, and we'll talk about the centre-backs, but he's just like typical safe horns so far, you know, and I'm confident in the goalkeepers.
Which is a good position to be in. We're fortunate for goalkeepers, and the good thing is they're all playing regularly as well, so that's good. Obviously, defensively, Scott McKenna's back, which is a good. I think that's a big positive, especially the fact that Hanley's out, because in terms of centre-backs, McKenna's probably the most similar to Hanley. Whether he starts on Friday, I'm not quite sure. There was speculation about Jack Hendry in terms of whether he'd still be involved after we went to Saudi, but Steve Clark's come out and said it won't be a problem as long as he's playing well, he'll be in the squad. Any objections to that, or do you think it's all right? He's still in the squad.
I don't have any objections to it. I think he's kind of, Jack Hendry broke in under Alec McLeish, where McLeish had that kind of, was tasked with the overhauling of the squad and bringing in the younger players, and it was probably a bit too early for Hendry at that point. But then he's gone abroad after his stint at Celtic. He's gone abroad and he's really kicked on. And I think he's one of the first names on the team sheet for me now. Jack Hendry, I think, is the anchor of that back three. And yeah, I don't have any issues with him being in the squad, even though he's obviously making some decent coin over in Saudi Arabia.
I know you're going to go into the other defenders, John, but you're just saying Jack Hendry's probably one of the first names in the team sheet. I'm looking through the rest of the defenders, centre-backs specifically, and I'm thinking about the centre-backs that aren't in the squad. And the one question that I'm asking myself is, are we class at centre-back now? Because it feels like we are. It feels like we are really good at centre-back.
We've definitely got options. And when you think back to like what maybe 3 years ago, when we were talking about centre-back, who are we going to play at centre-back, what we're criticising Hanley returning to the squad or being involved at any point.
He's class.
I think Hanley's particularly
class when he comes in.
He's obviously not in the squad. Jack Hendry, yeah. I mean, Jack Hendry's now a pretty experienced centre-back at international football. He could also chip in with your goal here and there. We've got Gallus as well, I think. Safe to say, I'd imagine he's good around the dressing room when you can... I've seen previous videos of him in dressing rooms and having a laugh and all that type of thing. You mentioned about Porteous in terms of how easy he's found international football, how much he's probably matured as a footballer since breaking into an international setup.
And yeah, he's caught me off guard. I was over in Krakow for the game against Ukraine and he had to come in, and I remember, you know, there was a number of players kind of pulled out for that last game in the Nations League, and you know, I think we called in Kingsley and so on as backup, and I mind my dad going, "Oh, well, Kingsley has to play." I was like, "Well, no, Portress was in the original squad. It's Portress is next up. He's going to start." And my dad, just thinking of when he'd seen him play for Hibs, just thought, "Oh no, this is going to be a car crash." And he was utterly sensational in the game against Ukraine. I think it's one of the best international debuts I remember watching, especially in such a high pressure game as well. You know, you're looking to try and get promotion, and yeah, Portress is. And as you kind of talk about, he's that shithousery against Spain and things like that. It's, you know, we've not had a player that does that sort of thing for a wee while. Like you're going back to the likes of Scott Brown, probably was the last player that we had who had that kind of element to him. And he certainly progressed a lot as a player. I'd be the first to admit I had big doubts about him, but when I've seen him playing for Scotland as of late, he's really no looked out of place. He's really stepped up.
The good thing as well, from an international point of view, is he's got a bit of pace. We're actually quite quick in defence overall, which is good.
Yeah, we're fleeing in defence. We are. You know, you've got Portis who's got pace. You've got Tierney who has got pace. You know, you've got even Suter's, you know, got a bit of a turn on him when he gets going. McKenna's pretty quick as well. You know, and you know, this is what I'm saying. I'm with you, Ewan. I mean, when Portis come in, I'm on record as saying to my mates in the group chat that I didn't think he had it. You know, I didn't think he had the mentality. I thought he had the raw talent initially when he came through at Hibs. But I thought after a couple of years, you know, some of the bomb scare moments, I thought, nah, do you know what? This boy's no go at it. Ironically, I think the move to Watford has probably been the best thing for him because it's took him away from some of the things he was kind of getting up to in his personal life up here. And it's taken him away from the kind of you know, he was quite a hated figure by everyone but Hibs in Scotland, you know, particularly Rangers fans. You know, even though I wanted to sign him. you know, but I think going away and moving away from Scotland has done the world a good. He comes in, he is the shithouse, he's got that about him. But, you know, when he's just playing his club football, that's his only focus, and he's getting no distractions down in Watford. So really, really pleased as to how well he has done since coming in. Listening through the centre-backs, John Suter, you know, obviously there's the issues there in his fitness, etc., but he's come in to be the kind of starting centre-back partnership with Conor Goldson at Rangers this year, and he's been brilliant, I think, personally. I think he's been absolutely fantastic. So Steve Clarke's he does have something of a headache at centre-back. I mean, we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 centre-backs there. Picking three, even, or even two, and we'll talk about formations, but picking two or three of them is going to be tough.
I think we know for certain that Tierney will start, and then it's it's two from four, isn't it, in terms of McKenna, Henry, Porteous. So I think Porteous will definitely start based on his international performances so far.
If he decides to play with a back three, might know, he might go to the two. He went to the four against, who was it last year?
It was basically the Nations League games in September he went to a back four because Robertson wasn't available. So,
that was it. Yeah.
You know, I think in the summer, Tierney wasn't available and he persisted with playing the back three. And I think it kind of became irrelevant that, you know, you're still putting McTominay into the back three in those games but you're going, one of the main reasons you play that setup is because you're trying to accommodate Tierney and Robertson. So I think you need a plan B if you don't have that headache. And I have to say, I think the games in September last year, where he did kind of just go to a back four, we looked a lot better, a lot more comfortable in those games because the personnel suited it that we had available to play that way. And yeah, but it also gives you that option, as you say, to go between a back three or a back four. Obviously, I think the preference is to play a back three if you've got both Tierney and Robertson there available. But as I say, it's less kind of almost narrow-minded from Clark that he does have the options there to kind of switch between the two.
Yeah.
Interesting one in terms of...
If I have the personnel available, I'd probably play a five. But it does depend on the personnel, of course. I mean, if you ask me who would play defensively on Friday nights, well, I'll start with centre-halves. I'd probably go for McKenna. I'd go for Hendry. And then I'm smart for choice here. McKenna, Hendry. And I'd maybe go for... I've got sneaky what we feel about John Suter playing. I don't think he will.
Well, Tierney will definitely start. But unless he's aye. If he's available, I think Tierney will definitely start.
Yeah,
Or the first
I
game of the season, probably. You will have
Nailed on certainty
Oh,
for
you.
me that Tierney's going to play in it. I can't see him changing from the back three that's played most of this campaign so far, which, you know, it's been Porteous, Hendry and Tierney on form. Clark's very much somebody who, you know, I can't, as I say, I can't see many changes across the entire 11 being made because of the results that they've got and the performances that they've got so far this campaign. I don't think there's a need to go and make drastic changes to the team and upset the apple cart essentially, because don't fix what isn't broken, you know. And so far this campaign, it's working.
Don't give the game away too early, you, and otherwise folk will just stop listening to the podcast. We're supposed to be talking about team selection
I
here and squad and all that, and how it's going to be a difficult decision for Clark. Come on here. No, I would completely agree. I think folk will talk about Patterson being back in the squad after he had to withdraw in the last one. I think it's Hickey's place to lose at the moment. We've spoken before, though, the good thing they've got from the point of view is if you're maybe wanting to be a bit more attacking, probably you'd have Patterson in there. Whereas if you're maybe wanting to be a bit more solid, then you've got Hickey. And they're different in terms of the fact Hickey can kind of play as that inverted fullback as well. He can step into midfield, help out in there. Whereas Patterson, you know, will just bomb forward, which helps us from the point of view, as we've mentioned so many times before, we don't have any wingers. We don't have any players that are kind of naturally kind of wide. The players that maybe kind of go into those areas, like maybe Armstrong or Christie, but having Patterson, having that outlet is something different.
It's a bit,
Which
John. It's a bit, John. Like, I mean, out on the right side, you do have that kind of dynamic with Patterson and Hickey. It is actually a bit like the Robertson and Tierney dynamic. Robertson is really good at getting extremely wide and really, really motoring up and down the wing and getting into the final third and putting crosses in and getting assists, which is what Patterson, you know, is a specialist, and I would say, you know, he's relentless in terms of his stamina and his pace and running up and down. Whereas, as you're saying, Hickey, maybe a wee bit slightly less kind of bombastic in terms of his running, but he can offer you that thing extra. You know, he can come in and he's a wee bit more solid defensively, and he has. I mean, one thing for the games in the Nations League. He know the Nations League and then in the group so far, he's had a great relationship with Porteous, I've found, and that's something that I think Clark's definitely going to draw on. So I do agree, it's probably Hickey's jersey to lose. But see, to be honest, I mean, either of them, you're not even batting an eyelid.
again, it just speaks volume for the competition we've got.
Yeah, as you say, it's kind of. You've got one who I would say is probably the more defensively sound in Hickey, and he kind of adds a little bit in terms of stepping in, and Port just comes round maybe the outside of him. Whilst, as you say, Patterson's that more natural wing back who's going to hug the line and, you know, get up and down all day. Looking at the Cyprus game in particular, the chances are we're going to dominate the ball. Do you maybe want the more creative one and the likes of Patterson in the side for that reason, where you're probably going to need to try and break Cyprus down, break the game down? That's where I would probably edge maybe towards Patterson for the game that we're going into.
Okay, what about yourself, Dave? Do you think?
Yeah, by the way, I've got to apologise, John, because I've had that busy a day at work and I completely forgot about Kieran Tierney. So I've got to apologise for
Don't
that.
worry,
Yeah.
Mikel Arteta's been the same,
I'm
so
busy thinking about formations. I'm like, I've missed a player here. So yeah, I completely forgot about
yeah.
Kieran Tierney there. So yeah, I think Tierney will be Robertson there, as you guys have alluded to. And I'd probably go for, I'm going to go for McKenna and probably Jack Henry, in all honesty, yeah. In terms of, I agree with you. I think we need to have as much opportunity as possible to try and expose Cyprus. So I think the ideal component for this, because let's be honest, we're going to have a lot of joy in the ball. But not, it's not only just going to be joy in the middle of the park. Cyprus will want to play a specific way. They'll want to try and battle, whilst we can go have a lot of joy down the wings, especially with Andy Robertson and Patterson. What I find, by the way, is I find that Andy Robertson's more a forward-thinking player for country than club. I find for Liverpool, he's a lot more way back in terms of how he approaches the game, how he tries to get on the ball and make things happen. Because let's be honest, for club, he's got certain individuals at Liverpool that can go and do the damage against opposition teams. For Scotland, he seems to be a live wire in terms of creating those chances when we need it. Save for Patterson. Patterson hasn't been as prolific as maybe Andy Robertson has, but Patterson, exactly the same token, can provide that threat, as has been shown for Everton. Let's be honest, he's shown it in a very struggling Everton side. So if he could do that at Goodison Park, he could do that for club as well. So I'd be all in for Patterson starting on Friday, absolutely.
The one thing that's interesting with Robertson as well is he's having to adapt his game at club level because of the system that Alexander Arnold's getting on the opposite side. So you're finding at times that Robertson's obviously playing as a third centre back, which I suppose at times he can do that. Maybe he's kind of sits in when Tierney maybe kind of bobs forward, but his game's evolving and developing. I suppose maybe then right wing back maybe is up in the air in terms of Hakeem Patterson. Nice position to be in. The midfield, we've named quite a lot of midfielders. The big one, or the big name, that was a bit of a surprise because I think we thought he was going to be playing for England or opting for England is Elliot Anderson at Newcastle. First question I've got from one of the listeners, Graham, friend of the podcast, has asked, do you expect Elliot Anderson to see much game time in these games against Cyprus and England? And how highly do you rate him? So I don't know if either of you guys, Dave or Ewan, have seen much of Anderson for Newcastle. Or even maybe a previous under 21 appearances.
Actually,
Go, sorry.
sorry, actually, my girlfriend's a Rangers fan, so I actually was at the Rangers Newcastle game, and Elliot Anderson played quite a chunk of that, and he's definitely one for the future, I would say, more so than the now, just based on, but again, you can look at the squad and you can almost see Clark already starting to regenerate the squad with the likes of Anderson, the likes of Gilmore, the likes of Ferguson coming in there for guys who might kind of eventually fade out the squad, going looking at the likes of Kenny McLean's and so on. But Anderson, in terms of the game time he's going to see, I reckon he'll probably get capped on Friday night, but I think it'll be off the bench more so to get that competitive cap, and then he's not got the option to kind of potentially switch further down the line, whilst if he gets capped on Tuesday against England, it's a friendly game. I think there's still scope for him to potentially jump ship. So if Anderson's going to play, I reckon it will be a cameo late on in the Cyprus game, just depending on how the game's going.
So you when he played that game, was he playing like an attacking midfield role? Or
I think it, certainly from what I saw,
a
he's quite box to box, I think, Anderson. And you know, in terms of the setup that we play, you know, we kind of typically play with those two holding players and the likes of McGregor or McTominay, or, and then you've almost got the two tens. So I think Anderson can lend himself to the system that Clark typically goes with, that kind of midfield, that almost box midfield. So I think he can lend himself to playing pretty much anywhere in there.
I think the biggest thing that excites me about Anderson is that there is a lot of John McGinn about him in terms of his style of play. He's like you're saying, he is box to box, but he's attacking as well. But you know, he's very comfortable sitting in a central midfield position. He's maybe not got the arse of John McGinn, but
Nobody
that's
has the arse of John
yeah,
McGinn.
that's. Yeah, that's something that will never be replicated. But you know, even at that, right? You know, John's. I mean, John's what, 27, 28, right? You know, he's and he strikes me, and a lot of this team strike me as guys that are not going to be done with international football anytime soon. You know, even guys like McGregor. I think I've got another 4 or 5 years, maybe. But. It's good to know that there is a succession planning kind of thing going on. I mean, Anderson's very young, very talented. And you know, at 20-year-old, you're talking, well, you know, the next decade potentially. So, and when you get him on last 10 minutes against Cyprus when we're 2 or 3 nil up, hopefully, and just get it signed, sealed, delivered, you're stuck with us.
The thing is as well, it adds further depth to an already strong part of the team anyway, because you've got Lewis Ferguson, who's championing a bit to try and get a start. His performances in Italy since he's been there has been remarkable, but he's only been getting minutes here and there off the bench. So Anderson in there as well. And then thankfully Billy Gilmour is back playing with Brighton regularly. Seems to be that he's a number one pick as well. I think some folk were worried the opening day of the season, whereby he wasn't playing in that lineup after they lost Caicedo and McAllister, but playing well, man of the match, I think, as well against Newcastle on Saturday, couple of assists. What was it, Scott's Eddie Aroud shit, but it was actually a shot. They've been autocorrect on WhatsApp, so it's all good. But Billy Gilmour, has he got to get his first goal over these two games?
He's not a goal scorer though, John. He's, you know, is he actually, I mean, has he even got a professional goal?
No.
I never recall him ever scoring a goal. Even at club level, I don't think he has.
No, he's not.
If he had it, aye, so he doesn't. You know, but I mean, see picking a Scotland midfield. I mean, I don't know how Steve Clarke does it. You know, I mean, you've got guys that, I mean, you've got even guys, you're talking about Ferguson, you've got guys that turn up like Ferguson, Kenny McLean, right, who are top players that come up and they maybe know they're not going to get a game, but if they do come in, they're always class, you know. Blown out by the Norway away game the other month there, with Kenny McLean. And that's the kind of strength and depth that we have at centre mid. It's just, yeah, I don't envy Clarke having to try and pick between all of these class midfielders. If you'd have said 10 years ago, right, in 10 years' time, you've got a centre mid who's just rattled one in against Juventus in the league. Was it two? No, it was one goal he scored. And he's going to be, you know, he's going to get on the bench behind a guy that didn't even get in the Man United squad at the weekend. You know, it's crazy, but you know, we're so good at that position. I just wish, with the best kind of well in the world, I just wish we could end up with a player in the position of striker or a, you know, that kind of winger attacking of that kind of top world class quality. I think about somebody like Evan Ferguson that's come onto the scene for Ireland. Why never us?
How
Maybe Gerald
dare you
comes.
disrespect Sir Lyndon Dykes like that?
I think what you find with Billy Gilmour is he's very tied in the ball. He's not going to be the type of guy that's going to be racing darting for a 30-yard run and be in the periphery of a box waiting to go and shoot from 15, 20 yards. I think you find he's one of these players that's. He reminds me a bit of N'Golo Kanté, a little bit, if that's a fair comparison to put it, because although he won't do the defensive side of the game, but he'll also, what he'll do is he'll find quick passes, he'll get into green areas, he'll make the balls down the channels, he'll ask questions of opposition defenders. He's got a bit of Gareth Barry in him, which is a ridiculous comparison to make here. He's got that Gareth Barry in, and where he can make that those passes, and sometimes they're killer passes, sometimes they're short and sweet passes. But he's the short and sweet type of player where he's not going to make that final judgment in terms of scoring goals, but he's the player that's going to be very, very good in terms of slowing the game down at times and doing the other side of the game, which is a
But
one that
I mean,
I heard. What? Funny boy, Josh.
no, I was just going to say it, but I mean, even you see the Newcastle game on Saturday, he was involved in all three of their goals. You know, an integral, maybe no assists, but integral in the kind of build up of the goals. And that's what he does. He, in my opinion, he is the ultimate swivel pivot player. You know, he is that ultimate kind of player that's head just, he sits, you know, he's like a meerkat. He's just kind of, his head just turns so perfectly, and he's always aware. 99% of the time, he's always aware of his surroundings and his where he can go with the ball next, and that's so vital to modern football. I cannot speak highly enough about Billy Gilmour. I could talk about him for ages. Dave's right. He's no type of player that's got drive to get into the box and wrap off a shot and score from outside of the box. It's not his game at all. And the thing about him is, I think he's fine with that. I don't even think he would be that bothered about scoring. You know, he's not got a professional goal, but I don't even think he's that bothered about that. I just think he loves, you know, playing boxes and you know, doing that kind of football that a wee kind of Xavi type midfielder plays. That's probably a great comparison as well. He is a bit like Xavi in that sense.
That was the word, Xavi.
Xavi, N'Golo Kante, Gareth Barry, any other midfielders you want to compare him to, Ewan?
Scott Pittman.
Yeah, Scott Pittman. No, I think, Kenny, on the chat about Billy Gilmour, I think the biggest positive is the fact that he's just playing games now. Obviously, it was always going to be difficult for him to kind of maintain a place in the Chelsea side. If anything, probably with how Chelsea are looking at it now in terms of the age of their squad coming down quite a lot, almost think he'd have a better chance at Chelsea now a little bit because of the kind of how they're reworking the model. But, you know, he's moved to Brighton, coincided with the manager that signed him, then moving on to Chelsea, which probably set him back a little bit. And he burst on the scene kind of in that England game, and then, you know, the games that followed that and the World Cup qualifiers. But I think as his game time diminished at Chelsea, as did his performances for Scotland, kind of coincided with that. And I think there was a drop-off in some of his performances, but I think the fact that, as you mentioned, the likes of Caicedo and McAllister moving on from Brighton, it's opened up that space in the Brighton team, and he's playing on a regular basis. He's playing very well on a regular basis now. He's getting minutes under his belt, and I think he kind of helps dictate the tempo of games for Scotland. As you say, he sits in that deeper role. You know, he can spread the play. It's quite often these sort of wee 10, 15-yard passes around the corner, kind of breaking lines every now and then. And yeah, I'm just delighted the lad's playing minutes now, because for players of his age, that's just what they need. But he's going to be a massive part of the squad for years and years to come. I kind of touched on that almost. We've got guys coming in, the likes of Anderson, hopefully does get capped, likes of Gilmour, likes of Ferguson, who are almost like a potential regeneration of the Scotland midfield for, you know, when guys do eventually hang out their boots at international level.
Yeah, and we're blessed as well with having guys in, even as well, Ryan Jack's in there, who can always do a job, especially away from home. Callum McGregor's nailed on, he's definitely going to start. So do you think Billy Gilmour will start on Friday, along with McGregor?
I think there's a good chance, just a wee one. Is Callum McGregor one of the most underrated players for Scotland? I don't think enough gets said about his performances for Scotland sometimes. And, you know, for example, look at the England game where Billy Gilmour made his debut. I know all the chat's going to be about the young lad making his debut in such a high-pressure game. But Callum McGregor was every ounce as good as him that night. But because Callum McGregor's, you know, been on the scene for a wee while now, just nothing was made of him. But I just think he's utterly exceptional for Scotland. And I think he's probably the most underrated player I've seen play for Scotland in a long time.
I think that's because the army that we call ourselves, the media, you know, they're going to focus on the goal scorers, they're going to focus on the Lyndon Dykes of this world, the Ryan Christies of this world, the Scott McKenna's of this world, the John Souters of this world, who score goals, Jack Hendry's of this world as well. The guys that score goals, but let's be honest, are immune to me being on mistaking them, but are still good players all over the piece. Whilst Callum McGregor, as you say, is an all-rounder for Scotland. He's composed and tidy on the ball. He'll get forward. He'll ask questions. He'll get a good capacity to Gilmour. McGregor will be one of those players that might end up 20 yards from goal, ready to hit a strike. He's not as box-to-box as like an Elliot Anderson, but he will get himself into good areas, Callum McGregor. He'll do the dirty side again. That's what, for me, makes him underrated, is because he does the dirty side again. And let's be honest, we're in a society now, we're in an environment where people want modern day football, basically pass, 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 or good football, good performances. We get a stadium, and that gets undermined for me.
Must have been alive, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, the thing about him is I agree with you, and I've said it on this podcast before, John, that I think, and I have thought for a long while, that Callum McGregor could go into pretty much any team in England. Maybe you're pushing it at Man City, Liverpool, well, Arsenal now, but they're the second in England now, aren't they? But I think apart from that, I reckon he could probably go into any team in England. And if I had one criticism of Callum McGregor, and is that I think the fact that he's stayed at Celtic his whole career, and you know he will stay at Celtic his whole career. He's not going to move now. But if I had one criticism, I think he's probably sold himself a wee bit short there. I think that he could have played at a much higher level than Celtic, and you know Celtic fans will make it that Celtic are the be all and end all of the footballing world. Well, they're not, you know, and I think he is good enough to have went to a higher level than Celtic, and but that's, you know, he's happy at Celtic, and he's been obviously had a really successful career with them. But I do think if I had one criticism, is I think he could go a lot higher because he is at every bit as top class as almost every midfielder in England. And the reason that he's underrated is because he plays in the SPL, and Celtic have perennially underachieved in the Champions League, and he's hampered by that, by the fact that obviously the players that he's playing around aren't as good as him. So yeah, but absolutely top class footballer. And here I'll just to noise the Celtic fans up even more. If I was to compare him to someone, honestly, I would actually compare him to Barry Ferguson. I think the two are distinctly very similar footballers. And you know, Barry went to England to Blackburn, and you know took the step up, and he ended up back at Rangers. You know, was it a success or not? Well, you know, you can argue about that. But so who knows? Who knows how things would have went if Callum moved? But I certainly think, in terms of world class centre mids, he is, you know, right up there with the centre mids that Scotland have ever had.
Okay. The next concern we might have, but for just now it's all right. McTominay, obviously he's scored a lot of goals in this campaign, but it looks like he is completely out of the pitch at Man U. The hope was he would get a move before the transfer window shut. Expect him to start though. I think having McGinn will start in those kind of advanced midfield roles. Agreed.
Yeah, I would say so. Again, it's don't fix something that isn't broken so far this campaign. And I think McTominay, what is it, the goal against the double against Spain, the double against Cyprus, so 5 goals he's sitting on for the campaign with the goal against Georgia as well. I don't think you can drop him. I almost think this advanced position for McTominay has really suited him. You know, if you look at club football, one of my probable criticisms with John McGinn when he played for Scotland originally, he kept getting played a lot deeper, and I thought we weren't getting the best out of McGinn playing in that sort of role. He was almost playing as one of those two sitting players. And I think I always thought McGinn had that kind of drive from the middle of the park, and Clark's the one that kind of spotted that and started getting him when he initially took the job. But he was kind of playing a 4-2-3-1, but McGinn was playing as a 10. So getting him in more advanced areas of the park, and then obviously the setup that he played. He's now again. He's getting McGinn as one of those tens, one of the inside tens, and his goal return for Scotland's exceptional off the back of that. And I feel you're getting the best out of him. Is he possibly doing the same with McTominay in this campaign? McTominay's played a little bit more advanced, as I say, kind of playing at one of those almost two number 10 positions at times, and 5 goals in 4 qualifying games. I mean, it's certainly clicking.
It's one of those as well, like we talked earlier about not having like a striker. It's maybe able to get one and two. Pardon me, but if we're getting guys in the midfield scoring goals, and McGinn took a long time to get going, as you say, Ewan. international level from a scoring point of view, McTominay's doing the same. So who's to say that McTominay won't be in double figures soon? And then we'll have more options in terms of goal scorers.
I think McTominay's a fascinating footballer. You know what I mean? Centre back for Scotland for a while, and then centre defensive mid, then centre mid, and now kind of almost a false, you know, an inside 10, you know, almost kind of a false support striker. And I think probably one of his best abilities is his natural physicality. He's fucking enormous. You know, he's an absolute unit. It's like putting Arnold Schwarzenegger up top. You know, he's such a, and he's so fit. You know, he just runs all day back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. He has the physicality and the stamina to get back and support midfield. But then when we make those breaks and we retain the ball, you know, we can then break and shoot forward, and he can be there to get into the final third. Yeah, I think who know I mean who knows you know he could, who knows how many more goals he could get. It seems strange that he's out of the picture at Man U. You know me, I don't follow English football, so he's I mean is he getting a move? I know there was chatty I'm going to Bayern Munich. Is that happening now? No.
Their window shut, so not at the moment. And then Bayern Munich are going for Palhinha, which
Right.
makes you think maybe they might, if they were linked with McTominay, or maybe inquired about him, and then for whatever reason it's not happened. He was getting linked with West Ham at one point. He was getting linked with
Yeah.
Newcastle. I think if Ten Hag's to stay there, he probably needs to get away, unless maybe he just kind of keeps on knocking him down at training. He is a professional, hardworking guy. He'll maybe force his way back into the setup, but at the moment it's not looking positive from his point of view.
Yeah, he's got a winner's mentality, but I mean, is there a reason he's had a fallout with Ten Hag, or is it just out?
I don't think so. I think it's just, you know, as much as I love Scott McTominay, I think from a Man United perspective, Man United are wanting to challenge for league titles and things like that. I do think their kind of sitting midfield pairing was Fred and McTominay, and I don't think that's a, personally, a centre midfield pairing that's going to win you the Premier League. And it's an area of the park that they had to strengthen. And last year they went and brought in Eriksen, they brought in Casemiro. Casemiro's been probably one of their best players for the last 12 months, but he's a genuine world-class sitting midfield player. And they had to go and pay the fee to get him, which was like 50, £60 million. So, you know, that's not a disrespect to Scott McTominay, but I think in terms of where Man United's ambitions are, I think they've had to probably progress from the likes of a McTominay. But as you say, for him, if that's going to be the case, he's going to have to move on. And I had him, I thought he would end up at a Newcastle or a West Ham, certainly. The Bayern Munich one came a bit out of nowhere, but they seem to all of a sudden be getting linked with centre midfielders galore at the tail end of the window. I think Conor Gallagher down south as well was another one that got bandied about. So, but yeah, I think McTominay is going to fall into that bracket where he's going to have to move on to get kind of regular minutes under his belt.
I think the
It's
thing
really
with
interesting.
McTominay as well, and I'll be brutally honest with this, as much as we're looking very horizontally into this and we're very looking very diligently into this, at exactly the same time here, guys, the fact that he's surplus the requirements at United, because what's lost he is, I think it's a good thing. I think it's a great thing for Scotland, because that pressure, that toxicity that comes from a club of the magnitude of Manchester United is only going to grow pressure. It's only going to deteriorate performances, because let's be honest, he's not wanted. He's not wanted. That's the reason why West Ham have came in, Newcastle have came in, Bayern have came in. That's the reason why. Because the last few managers, quite simply, can't find his best position, let's be honest. Ten Hag can't find his best position. Previous managers in the past can't find his best position, which means, and Steve Clarke, that just tells you how much of a knowledge he has within the game, also how diligent he is about his players. And that's why Ray McTominay shines for me. Scotland, the environment that Steve Clarke has implemented, isn't an environment where there is pressure, but there's a fun pressure to it, if you know what I mean. It's not like a pressure where you've got security in your back 24/7, which is why I think McTominay is always going to be better than the Scotland jersey, than the United jersey. Darren Fletcher was he wasn't similar, but you found it's a funny one because you found that Darren Fletcher was better for United than he was for Scotland to a certain extent, but at exactly the same time.
Different roles.
I was about to say the same thing.
Like different roles.
The thing with Darren Fletcher is at Man United, Ferguson would go to him for all the big games where Man United aren't going to have as much of the ball, because Fletcher was a brilliant destructive midfield player. Whilst I think because he had that tag, he plays with Manchester United, he then comes to play with Scotland, everyone's thinking he's going to be this brilliant ball-playing centre midfielder who's going to dictate the tempo of games, which just wasn't his game. And I think that's where maybe the criticisms came of him when he played in a Scotland jersey, because I think fans expected something off him that wasn't Darren Fletcher's game and the strong aspects of his game. And there was probably a spell when that transition, when Gordon Strachan left and we kind of were trying to bring in younger players, we were crying out for a Darren Fletcher for a spell. When Alec McLeish took that job initially, we didn't have any midfielders that could break up the game. And we were absolutely crying out for that type of player all of a sudden.
Aye, no, that's what I was thinking as well. Sorry to interrupt you there, Dave. See, the other one that could be an interesting point away from home, Ryan Christie is someone that quite often gets a nod away from home because of his ability to press. I believe at Bournemouth as well, he can play a slightly deeper role, but I think he'll come into the equation, or do you think it is those four?
I think it probably is, but Christie, I was doing that kind of quiz. I think a lot of you have done it, that kind of BBC quiz thing where you had to guess the amount of caps and the players under Clark and all that the other week. And I couldn't believe the amount of caps that Christie's had under Clark, something like 42 or something like that, which I was surprised. But then I thought to myself, do you know what, actually, that seems about right, because Christie's one of those players that Clark likes. You know, Clark has a certain amount of players that will have involvement in his squad or in his team, come what may. And I think Ryan Christie is one of them. John McGinn's certainly one. But I think Ryan Christie is one as well. Stuart Armstrong's another as well. That I think Clark just really likes him as a player. I think he'll probably have some involvement. I don't think Clark will change the... Again, you know, it's Cyprus. Does he change up certain aspects of the team? Does he go for broke for goals to put on a bit of a show? I don't know. But I personally don't think he'll change too much. So I can see Ryan having some sort of involvement, definitely. But I don't know about starting. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, fitness and game time comes into account and off. McTominay's not playing for Man U.
Right, okay, so up top, there's a slight concern because Lyndon Dykes hasn't featured the last three games for QPR. Shea Adams hasn't been playing particularly much for Southampton because he was under speculation in terms of move away. Nesbitt started his career pretty well down in the Championship. And then obviously we've got Lauren Shankland as well. We expect it'll be Shea Adams that will start though.
Even if Lyndon Dykes is injured, I'd play him. And that's just because I'm utterly, utterly biased and I love the man like he's my own child after his spell at Livingston. But, nah, Dykes, I think Dykes is pivotal to how Scotland play, to be honest. I think he's... I remember watching him when he came to Livet, and I probably watched him maybe four or five games, and I thought at the time he could do a job for Scotland, kind of knowing his background, that his mum and dad from Dumfries and everything like that. And I know he's got his critics, but... What's he got, a goal every three for Scotland? I mean, there's a lot better strikers that have played for Scotland that would absolutely bite your hand off to have Lyndon Dykes' goal scoring record for Scotland. And he's came up with big moments for us over the years that he's been involved under Steve Clark, and, you know, the Norway game being a prime example. You know, that goal would have rescued a valuable point, albeit ended up turning into three. And again, it comes off of Dykes' assist, you know, initially going for the header, you know, he's put the defender under pressure for it to fall to McGinn at the back post, and then the layoff for McLean. I think Linden's one of those ones who, kind of international football you might get, that's maybe not been playing a lot of minutes, but he could still turn up for these two games and still probably play 180 minutes if he was asked to. I think that's the type of guy that he is and the type of player that he is. But yeah, I would still, if Linden's obviously fit, I don't know if he's carrying a knock, which is why he's not been involved in the last few games, but if Linden's fit to play, I would have Linden in.
I think he's maybe had a knock and that's why he's not been involved. I would have Dykes over Adams, but if there's question marks over fitness, then I think maybe it might be better to have Adams start and then maybe Dykes off the bench. But we'll see, he's a valuable contributor to the Scotland team, Dykes.
I mean, I'm happy with either, to be honest. But I do agree with you guys. Dykes is one of these guys that, as you say, has his critics, right? Has his limitations, right? Let's not be daft and pretend that Linden is this naturally gifted footballer, because he wasn't. I don't think he started playing football till he was like 16 or 17, didn't he?
Yeah,
But that being said, I love Linden Dykes. I just think there is a quality about him that comes alive in Scotland games, and. You know, I try to think about, there are very few players that just play above themselves when they put on a Scotland jersey. McFadden was certainly one I would probably say, although he had a wonderful club career, you know, was truly world-class with Scotland. John McGinn is absolutely brilliant for Scotland, but he's also brilliant for Aston Villa. So, whereas Linden Dykes is one of these guys who, whenever he's in a Scotland jersey, I just think he's absolutely brilliant. But, you know, on the other side as well, I think Adams is a great footballer and he's never let us down, you know. I don't think he's ever struggling to recall a game where I've said that Adams has been crap, you know. So I'm really happy with either or of them. Both of them have their own kind of uses. But yeah, I just think, I mean, again, depends what Clark is wanting to do against Cyprus. You know, what is it that we're looking to do against them? So we'll see. And actually, probably, you know, probably a wee bit ties into what Cyprus like as a team, you know, because I can't even really remember that much for the last time we played them. The only thing I remember is that Gogic played for them and it was crap.
I remember us interviewing Linden on our podcast, you know, not, I think it was probably a couple of weeks before he scored that goal against Celtic, and you know, he just, everything about his personality and everything, I just thought Steve Clarke should be on the phone to him and trying to persuade him to represent Scotland over Australia, because as you say, because he's late to football, he doesn't have that, maybe that same understanding of players and their reputations and things like that. And I remember when we played Celtic in that game, Scott Brown was trying to noise him up and he just stood and laughed in his face. And it's, you know, there's other players in Scottish football who would, you know, back down from that, but because he doesn't really know who he is, he doesn't care. He had that Aussie mentality. And I think one of the lines I always take from when we spoke to him was, I like to piss people off. And I think I just always thought he won't get the pressure playing for Scotland. It won't get to him because he's got that personality. And I think he's absolutely shone for Scotland. And as I say, I would definitely, if he's able to kick a ball, I would get him on against England, because an Aussie born Scot, I mean, who wouldn't want to be scoring in that game, eh?
He's underestimated though as a player as well in terms of technically. I think he's pretty good technically.
I don't think he gets the credit he deserves for it. See, his link-up play, I think, sensational. And that's, again, I might have a slight bias because obviously he was at Livingston and he was excellent for us, but I don't think he got the credit he deserved. And we used to get to go into press rooms, and for me, it was never a coincidence that every single manager from an opposition team mentioned Dykes. I don't think that's just a coincidence. Every manager mentioned him after every game. And as I say, that's not a coincidence. Obviously, folk know that he's very good. And Yes, he's never going to be a 20, 30 goal a season striker, but I think the role of a number nine's changed in recent times. I don't think you get the same amount of number nines that do score those level of goals. I think it's more about an overall contribution to the team in terms of how they bring others into play. And I think because we've typically played with those two tens, I think Dykes is just perfect foil with that.
Aye, because you're more likely for McGinn McTominay to get ahead of Dykes, whereas Adams will be more likely to run the channel, so there's not as much space for maybe McGinn and McTominay to run to as well. So, another question we've got from this time from Andy: would you take a win against Cyprus and defeat in the friendly to England, or a point against Cyprus but combined with a win against England? Aye, it's a
that's a tough one. The thing is, we're so pretty much guaranteed qualification that, you know, there is that wee kind of temptation, isn't there? Do you know what? We could just take the point and then beating England would be fucking magic, you know? I would need to, I've not got the table in front of me in the fixture list. I would need to look at it, John. I would need to have a real think about that. It's a hard one because I've never seen us beat England. You know, I was only 5 year old when we last beat England, so I would love to even it's just a friendly, I know, but you know, I would just love to do them. But then I think to myself, well, 2 points dropped against Cyprus is a pretty big 2 points dropped. So
could you imagine the Clark out brigade if we drew a game, even though we're still top of our group?
Yeah,
they'd be out in force on Twitter.
Actually, see if we got a point against Cyprus, could we still qualify on Tuesday night, given results? I would need to look at the table.
He's got the phone to Chris for that one.
Aye, the permutations, aye.
If we can't be complacent, I would go with the first option, if I'm going to be honest. As long as we didn't disgrace ourselves against England, I don't think we could be complacent because we've came a long, long way. We've got some massive victories over Norway, Spain, statement victories, I may add as well. Not just the odds, oh, man, we got a wee bit there, but we did enough to get 3 points. Norway and Spain were vintage victories, statement of intent, and job done. And if we were to win that away, it would be pitiful and lackluster. There's no getting away from it. So for me, full focus on this Friday, England and Tuesday. Let's be honest, it's a cash cow friendly just for 150 years. That's all it's for. There's no real intent about the game. For me, the game's irrelevant when it comes to seriousness. It's about making a bit of money, and ultimately, I think I might be wrong, guys. Is there a bit of charity involved next Tuesday?
I don't know.
It's
not set down
thing?
A marker. Does it not set down a marker for when we play in the final at Euro 2024?
Yeah, it does. I'm thinking about two alternative options here, actually. What about we take the loss against England, we get the 3 points against Cyprus, then when we get to Euro 2024, we draw England in the group and then dump them out?
That's exactly my idea, Josh.
Yeah, at the tournament. Either that or, and this is probably going off field a wee bit, I mean, do you think, you're saying it is like a, you know, just an exhibition match, Dave. But I mean, do you think there could be something in doing maybe like a every 2 year game against England and making a trophy of it and having it? You know that way in rugby they have the England Scotland.
They used to do that.
The Kilkenny Cup.
Aye, I think they do it in rugby. But they used to do the Home Nations years and years ago, didn't they?
They tried to reinvigorate that with the, was it the Carling Nations Cup, and they had the Republican, but England are too big to take part in that.
I know, it was only us Wales, Northern Ireland and Ireland, and I think Ireland went on and won it, didn't they?
We could have won it, I think, if Kenny Miller, I still remember Kenny Miller missing a chance late on over in Ireland, but nah, To answer the questions, 3 points against Cyprus. Let's be honest, we want to see us qualify for tournament. I'm a bit like you, Josh. I'm absolutely desperate to see us beat England. Like, my dad was there in 99 when Don Hutchison scored the last time we beat them. He was there when Kenny Dalglish put the ball through Clemency's legs. He was behind the goal for that. And I kind of always talk about how my dad had those I was there moments watching Scotland against England. And, you know, I feel like Harry Kane robbed me back in 2017 off my I was there moment with Griffiths' free kicks. So I'd absolutely love nothing more to go and beat that mob down south. But for me, watching us qualify for tournaments, watching us potentially top the group, which would give us possibly an even better draw going into the Euros, Cyprus get 3 points. That's the one for me.
Right, okay, on that, on the back of that, Scott asks, are we worried about Cyprus away just because we are Scotland? Or are we not now because the mindset is that we want every game now thinking under Clark we can win?
I think if you look at Clark's record in general against the lower ranked sides over his qualifying campaigns, I think he'll probably be near on 100% record against the kind of lower seed type side. Sorry, so I don't think we have that same degree of complacency. I think I'm with every Scotland fan when the group was drawn and we saw we got Georgia and that was our second last game away over there. I think everyone just went, oh no, just because of the past couple of results we've had there and how it's scuppered two qualifying campaigns essentially. But I think there's a degree of professionalism about the team. There's a ruthlessness in these games against the lower ranked sides now, and I think we'll get the job done. Granted, it's not going to be an easy game. I'm sure Cyprus will make it difficult. They did for large spells at Hampden until McTominay got those two goals late on to kind of put a more reflective shine on the result. But yeah, I think we'll be all right. We'll get the job done.
Okay, so we're all in agreement, Dave, Josh?
Yeah, I think Friday, I think Steve Clark will have enough of a good mentality about him to see the job through. I mean, Cyprus are an improving side under the guy Tikmus Kalantzis, or however you pronounce it. But in terms of us, we'll have enough about us in the locker to get the job done. And, it's a game I've been worried about 4 years ago, 5 years ago. But if you look at Steve Clark, and I'm going to refer to Ewan's point here, Steve Clark's only black mark for me is, well, two. But one in particular is Republic of Ireland. The second one is probably the Czech Republic game in Euro 2020. But if you take that complexion, there's only black mark alongside that is probably the Republic of Ireland. And that's the only result for me that I look at and say, oh, that was intense. That was a poor result. But apart from that, as usual, I wanted to, a record against the smaller ranked sides is fairly pleasing. So just hoping I can keep going, continuing and finding.
Yeah, okay. I think, sorry, John, just for me, aye, 3 point, England aside, aye, pragmatism is the best way forward. Beating Cyprus is the number one priority here. And I think we will do that because that's been one of the biggest changes under Clark is that we've been so consistent in beating the teams that we should be beating.
Right, okay, all good. Right, what I'm going to do, we will cover the England game in more detail next week, but I'm going to go over to a segment that I interviewed Russell from Three Lions podcast earlier from an England point of view. So we will hear from him. There's some quiz questions as well for him in terms of from England-Scotland matches. And following that, we will come back and there will be some questions from a Scotland point of view. Okay? So we'll go over to Russell as well with me. This is like me going back in time and then coming back to the present again. It'll be okay.
Hello, I'm Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Scottish Football Forums podcast.
So, over to Russell from Three Lions podcast, who is on as a guest. How are you doing, Russell?
Oh, very well. Thank you very much for inviting me back on. You well?
Yeah, good. Yeah.
Good stuff.
Nice and sunny today. We're recording this a week prior to the game itself. So, it's sunny just now, unlike when Scotland last played against Georgia, and I made the famous quip of, "Hey, the weather's really great today. We'll need a jacket." And then we saw what happened there. So hopefully the weather continues to be nice for the next week or so.
Well, yeah, let's hope so. I mean, I'm told that the weather in Poland, where we're heading to for our Ukraine game, is exceptionally good as well. So I'm hoping to top up the a little bit of the tan when I come to Glasgow.
I don't know if anyone ever come to Glasgow to top up their tan, but we'll see what happens. So yeah, obviously we're doing this as part of the preview of the England game, which takes place 150 year centenary march, anniversary match, I should say, which returns the favour of 2013 when there's the FA 150 year march as well. So I'm actually going to start off with that, right? Because my worry is when we talk about previewing the game, we've got a quiz, and that some of the stuff comes up before we do the quiz. So I'll run through it as we go, kind of thing, right?
Go on in.
So in that game, you might remember that Ricky Lambert came off the bench and scored his first touch in international football.
Yep.
Do you remember who scored the other England goals in that match?
Do you know, I've deliberately not done enough research. So when were we? 2013, you say? I'm going to guess. Was James Milner on the score sheet? And my other guess will be Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain. I mean, would Rooney be too obvious? I've picked four goal scorers there, haven't I?
I know.
A 3-2 win.
So the 2013 match, a couple of players that maybe you might not expect, but Theo Walcott.
Ah, Theo Walcott. It was probably with Oxlade-Chamberlain at Arsenal at the same time.
Yeah. And the other one, Danny Welbeck.
Okay, Welbeck. Yeah, okay. I was there at the game, and I remember being up in the upper tier at Wembley, and when Lambert came on, everyone was like, "Oh, really? Yeah, Ricky Lambert's coming on as a substitute." And there was no one knows what's going to happen when a player comes on as a substitute like that. But yeah, it was a header, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah. One, I'm pretty sure. So yeah, and we'll be asking the same question for the Scotland fans when it comes to that game, but in reverse in terms of who scored the Scotland goal. So be a bit of fun between the two. We'll see who can do better. So the game that's Tuesday, England going into the match. Obviously, it's a friendly after, as you mentioned, the qualifier that you've got to play. How do you think England will approach the friendly? I mean, I think before when you've been on the podcast, from a Scotland point of view, a Scotland-England match maybe means more to us than what it does to you. Did you see maybe your rivalry as different teams?
Do you know, I sort of say yes and no. I think because the fact this fixture hasn't been played as much in recent years probably means, yeah, I mean, I've got lots of friends or parts of like WhatsApp groups are all keen to get to Scotland. If it was like, you remember, back in the day when it was used to be played on an annual basis.
Yeah.
Maybe that then wasn't, I don't know, times have changed, haven't they? Back then it was like highly anticipated game. Maybe, I don't know. I think people are looking forward to it, but at the same time, we know it's a friendly, in inverted commas. I think, It will, the whole atmosphere and result of the game may depend on the results, not just of our game against Ukraine a few days prior, but I think, have you got Cyprus? So if results don't go either of our ways in those games, then I think both of us will be looking to get back up and running with a result against one another.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think one thing that stands out, and I've seen you mention this on Twitter earlier on today, is I don't think so far there's been any call-offs from either squad.
Well, yeah, I was corrected by that. As it happens, yeah, today, on the day we're talking, Monday, we no longer have
Jack Grealish or Trent Alexander-Arnold. So, I mean, Jack Grealish is a big miss, not just for the Ukraine game, but just for the Scotland as well. Trent Alexander-Arnold, obviously, he in the last game against Malta. I can't remember if he played against North Macedonia, but against Malta, he played in like the midfield, scored a cracker. But at the same time, he has had a tendency to withdraw from England squads on occasions, Trent. But you know what he's capable of, and we know what will be missed by his absence, and likewise Jack Grealish. But as far as I'm aware, as of the time we're talking, it is those two that have withdrawn.
Right, okay. I haven't seen anything confirmed in terms of any withdrawals. It would be there again, a guy who knows better. I think Trent's an interesting one because obviously there's been the talk about maybe right back not his best position. Is he better in midfield? And Southgate's experimented with that a wee bit. Neil Klopp's experimented with it a wee bit. So if he is kind of missing out, I think prior to it, it's because he wasn't guaranteed a start at right back. Because you've got Walker, who, for whatever reason, Southgate seems to prefer.
Southgate has got his preferences with various players that when the squads come round, you kind of know that they're going to be in, regardless of their team form. I mean, Harry Maguire is a classic example. Jordan Henderson is one of his favourites, and obviously he's moved to Saudi. Maybe clouds that from some supporters' point of view, but you know that Southgate has relied on him over the years, and players don't seem to have let Gareth down over the years, and he sort of returns that favour by selecting them.
Yeah, it's kind of like similar to ourselves in terms of having that kind of club mentality, whereby as long as you're doing well for your country, regardless of maybe club form, you'll still get called up. And you could understand it based on what England have done over the last 6 years or so with Southgate. Understandable. I mean, kind of starting off, obviously, you look at the kind of squad itself, goalkeeping situation, you're nailed on with kind of Pickford being there as the starter. Does it ever concern you from a point of view of like if it came to kind of crucial matches that he doesn't really kind of give the other keepers a game? Because it's a similar thing for us. We don't have much experience in terms of like our backup keepers, in terms of caps.
Yeah, it's I guess like if you were to look back over England goalkeepers over the years, there was a period of time where there was, I mean, this is even before I sort of followed England or before my time, when like there was Shilton and Woods. They were both juggling or whoever, Bobby Robson, and who before that, Don Howe, would have juggled with those keepers and never really settled on one. There was a time when there was Capello had, who was there, David James and
Robinson had been in the squad at that point.
Robinson was there. Robinson kind of staked his claim and was quite a regular. There's the guy, Rob Green.
Rob Green.
And David James, I think, were similar period of time. But we're in this period of time now where Jordan Pickford is the main goalkeeper for England. I mean, he's had a couple of incidents for Everton back into last season. I think the own goal he conceded the other day was a little unfortunate, but then like redeemed himself with a cracking save right at the end of the game. But yeah, you are right. I mean, when we've got Sam Johnston and Aaron Ramsdale as the two backups, it would be nice to see them just get some more minutes just to show what they can do. Maybe the Scotland game, maybe half time. If Pickford plays all of Ukraine, plays first half of Scotland, and maybe Ramsdale comes on for the second half. I really don't know, but how do you juggle it? Really, it's a stuck between a rock and a hard thing, really.
Yeah, I think the argument is that these guys maybe at club level play big enough games that they would be ready anyway.
Yeah,
The interesting thing from both their points of view, Johnston and Ramsey, was they're both under pressure because obviously, Palace, they've signed Dean Henderson, another English keeper, and then at Arsenal, you've got Raya that's on loan from Brentford, so it'll be interesting to see what happens going forward from there.
And then we've got Nick Pope at Newcastle as well, who, whilst maybe he's the issue that came up with his distribution with his feet in a couple of games, but he's a capable England goalkeeper.
Definitely. Defensively, obviously there's a bit of inexperience in the squad at centre back. And you mentioned McGuire obviously not playing at Man U. Is there anyone would you expect then would start in terms of, you think McGuire will start with experience and then it'll be a case of someone who'll partner him?
Yeah, I do think McGuire will start. Simply because the fact that we need that stability, whilst we've got no John Stones, there's no Tyrone Mings, both injured and unavailable. Harry Maguire is the England stalwart in that back line. I mean, 57 caps, you can't argue with, can you? I mean, he's got a bit of game time. Obviously, he came on as a substitute for United against Arsenal at the weekend. But I mean, who's he going to play up alongside him? Maybe Lewis Dunk gets a run out.
I looked at the squad and look at the centre backs between, I think, the other four centre backs in the squad. So you've got Colville, who's made his first appearance in the squad. You've got Lewis Dunk, who's got one cap. You've got Tomori, who's got three caps, and then Gwe, who's got four caps. You've got eight caps between those four.
He's
a sign for somebody. I know Colville's been getting a lot of praise from his loan spell at Brighton last year, and I know Chelsea have maybe been a bit different, but I think his performances have been pretty good.
Yeah, it is an inexperienced sort of situation we find ourselves in with regards to caps and that side of things. I think he's just going to have to experiment with one, isn't he?
Yeah.
What choice does he have? We've just got to keep our fingers crossed that there's no more injuries.
Aye, it's maybe a shame from an England point of view in terms of maybe kind of building and continuing that kind of maybe progression in the squad that Stones isn't available, so it could be Stones and somebody else, because the natural thing is going forward it will be Stones and somebody as long as he's fit. You would think maybe over time Maguire will be phased out the team with these guys pushing for a place.
Yeah, well, I mean, the priority will be the Ukraine game. And I mean that with the greatest of respect to yourself. So, I mean, your priority will be the Cyprus game. So, I mean, that the back line may totally change come the Scotland game. I would expect Maguire to start for Ukraine. But as to what happens against Scotland, I really don't know.
Yeah, and then midfield, you've also mentioned Henderson being a kind of favourite. I mean, the big one everyone's talking about, and two guys that have had transfers actually, I mean, Bellingham, the start he's had at Real Madrid, the confidence that he has as a player so young. I mean, future England captain for sure.
Oh, England captain, Ballon d'Or winner, World Cup winner. it's such a nice story, Jude Bellingham's, because you kind of just see the progress he's made at such a young age to be, what did he have, a season at Birmingham City? And I remember thinking, wow, okay, they've retired a shirt for him because he's gone to Dortmund. Excuse me.
Yeah, you went to Dortmund for a big fee as well at such a young age. And they were very reluctant to let him go. And then Real Madrid stepped in and signed him for a massive fee. But it's a fee that they'll get back over the years.
Oh, without a doubt, I imagine with shirt sales, they'll get that back within a couple of years. And I think he's scored five goals already for Real Madrid.
Yeah, and it shows as well how much confidence he has in himself. He took the number five shot, which previously Zidane wore at Real Madrid.
Oh. And he fits into it lovely, doesn't he?
Yeah, he's doing well. And then the other one, obviously, Declan Rice, who got his move to Arsenal in terms of kind of a big club so he can kind of play Champions League football, score an important goal at the weekend as well. I mean, that pair, to have those in midfield, you're potentially going to have them for another, I mean, as a pair, minimum 5-6 years.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, Bellingham longer, but Rice is a wee bit older.
Yeah, I think he's 24, I believe, Rice. And the move to Arsenal, he just seems to have transitioned in. He slipped in nicely. He said that he just feels like he's been there. Not all his life, obviously, but he feels like he's been welcomed in, and scoring against United at the weekend sort of just shows that. He's fitted in. He's been a part of an England team for so long now. 43 caps for him. He's just, I was saying on my own podcast that Gareth has any manager has a spine, don't they, that they'll always sort of pick from. And you could almost say, like, he's got his favourites, as we've mentioned, Pickford there, Maguire. Declan Rice is one of his spine players, his go-to players, and he will be for quite some time.
Yeah, this might not help me when we're doing the quiz later, because I've got a feeling you've got all the players there with all the caps, but we'll come on to that later on anyway. Aside from that, in the midfield, the one that's interesting from our point of view, he played in Scotland, that has a loan spell at Aberdeen, James Maddison, another one that's got a move to a big club at Tottenham straight away. Instant impact, even made vice captain. Probably someone that under Southgate, I think, has had to wait his turn for a chance. Some of it maybe being his own doing. I can remember at one point, I think there was a casino incident or something like that. He got called up for a squad, and maybe the attitude was kind of questioned. But I think he's someone that's kind of going to get a chance going forward. Does he fit into that midfield?
Yes, possibly. I mean, he's going to have to shuffle a few around if he is going to go into the midfield. But I mean, the England squad announcement has actually put him as a forward. But again, like you say, he's gone to Tottenham for 40 million, 42 million, something like that. And again, like Rice, he's just fitted like a glove into Tottenham's lineup. Scored a couple of goals against Bournemouth and Burnley, I think it was. So yeah, he's another player that can add to his three caps if he's on form, and like you say, there was an incident a little while back, wasn't there, with a casino that I think he was sent home, and I think a lot was made of that the papers like to do, don't they?
Mm-hmm.
But good player regardless, yeah.
You know, he is. And then, I mean, attacking-wise, I think when I looked at the squad and the way it was named, it was like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 attackers. Mm-hmm. Obviously, with the experience of Harry Kane, everyone knows about Harry Kane. He's got his move to Bayern. There's not really much that kind of needs to be said about him.
Other than he scored in the last minute when we played you last time.
Aye, cheers for that, Russell. cheers for that. And Ketia is an interesting one, because obviously he's been playing at Arsenal because Jesus has been out, though, obviously, Southgate's decided to take a look at him. Whether he'll maybe get minutes over the two games, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, we'll be interesting. Obviously, Nketiah came through the under-21 pathway. And he's either the top scorer for the under-21s or he's the most capped under-21. One of the two. Has been doing it for Arsenal, especially back end of last season, was getting goals. I don't think he's... I'm just casting my mind back. I'm not sure if he's scored this so far. He may have scored the first goal of the season for Arsenal. But he's always been on the periphery, I think, of Southgate's vision, but never actually drafted him into the squad. So maybe this is one of those times where he's just bringing in a player to just see his personality around the squad. He may not get some minutes. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that we've seen about Andrew Southgate is he's not shy to bring the players through from the under-21s. Like, quite a few of these guys that are in the squad just now have come through that pathway, so that's what you want. That's what the idea of under-21s is.
Yeah.
The other ones that stand out, I mean, it's hard to believe that Saka is only 21 as well, because what he's doing in his career, the amount of assists that he gets, the goals that he gets, always plays football with a smile on his face as well. You've got him and then Phil Foden as well, who, and the trophies he's won at the age of 23 is unbelievable. And yet, he can't become a regular in either the City team or the England team from an outsider's point of view.
It's crazy.
A player like that not playing regularly seems crazy.
Yeah, no, it is. And you just kind of hope from an England perspective that when they're unleashed for England after not being able to play for City on a regular basis or whatever club side, that they just take their chance and show how eager they are.
Yeah. See, I want to go back a wee bit just to the kind of World Cup, because I think there was maybe a feeling of disappointment, obviously kind of getting knocked out at the quarterfinal stage.
Yeah.
And then after it, there was the will Southgate stay, will he go? Do you think at that time Southgate should have gone, or do you think he kind of deserves another crack with a squad?
The thing that always strikes me is when the Southgate question comes up is who is there that can logistically replace him? At the time, I think obviously Eddie Howe had just taken over at Newcastle, so wasn't going to be up in sticks there. Graham Potter obviously was at Chelsea and was touted as being a future England manager. Was, I think, had just come into the role and obviously didn't last too long there.
Yeah.
But I think timing-wise, back then, back end of last year, it was right, I think, that Gareth just got one more crack at it. I think his contract was for the end of 2024, Euros 2024. So I think it was right that we let him continue. I mean, what have we done? We've been to World Cup semi-final, European Championships final, quarterfinals of the World Cup. Okay, yes, there's the obvious things that have been said that he didn't get right when it really mattered. But I wonder, could someone like Eddie Howe or Graham Potter, would they be able to get it right at the same time? So I'm more than happy for Gareth to take us forwards, maybe this one last time, and then we'll have a proper sit down and work out who can replace him.
Yeah, and the good thing from his point of view as well, or whoever maybe comes in the future, that squad is going to potentially be good up for like a good couple of campaigns, maybe with the exception of Maguire and maybe Trippier, Walker. I think, aside from that, and Henderson.
So, yeah, and I think as well, what's worth mentioning, it's not just the stuff that you see with Gareth on the sideline. He's had to deal with so much more in his tenure. I mean, every manager's had to deal with COVID and all that. But all the taking of the knee, whatever your thoughts on it, he was very vocal on it. There was the armband incident. There was incidents with the players being sent home from Iceland and James Maddison as well. So he's had sort of to oversee a lot of that, and I think he's done it in his own way that he's galvanised the team together quite well. He's got the trust and respect of the players.
Yeah, from an outside point of view, I mean, even from our side, his man management skills seem really high and really good, and then the players seem to really like him. You can see that by the performances, I think.
Yeah, and from experience and personal experience, he's a genuinely nice guy on the one occasion that I met him.
Yeah, aye, no, definitely. Right, I'm going to go back now. Another quiz question for you. So, 2014 game at Parkhead. You recall that one?
I was there for that.
Do you remember who played in goals in that game?
Ooh, who played in goal? So, Joe Hart springs to mind, but who was the guy at West Brom? Goalkeeper at West Brom, I'm sure he was. I can see his face. No, I'm gonna have to go Joe Hart.
Okay, it was actually Fraser Forster.
Fraser Forster. He was at West Brom, wasn't he?
I think, was he at West Brom at one point? Yeah, like Southampton. I think at the time he was at West Brom. This question was sent on from John.
He's got me. Well, yeah, someone will correct me. Yeah.
He's got an absolute stinker here for you as well. He is the winner of the Hampden Roar quiz, whereby there was a few Scottish guys kind of taking part in a quiz. And the guy that does it came up with this round, and it's complete the lineup, right?
Oh. Now, On the 2014 game?
No, it's actually a different game. So it'd be hard enough for a game that took place like a month ago sometimes for these things. But this one is from 2017. So the famous, well, from our point of view, the 2-2 game.
Right? 2-2, yeah.
So I'm going to give you the players and then you have to fill in the blanks. Right?
Can I have a pen?
Aye, sure. Aye. Yeah, I know what it's called.
Go on.
So in goal on this occasion was Joe Hart. Okay.
Yeah.
Then right back, Kyle Walker.
Yeah.
Blank. So who? The centre-back. And on this occasion, he partnered Gary Cahill, if that's any help to you. Right?
Yeah.
That's the first blank. The second blank is a left-back.
Yeah. Blimey.
And then midfield, we've got Eric Dyer.
Yeah.
We've got another blank.
Yeah.
Or Dele Alli.
Dele Alli, okay.
And then another blank. I think I've given you five blanks, have I?
One, two, this, no, you give me four blanks.
Four, there. Okay, there's another blank, and then Harry Kane. So I told you it was a sinker.
Yeah, it is very much. I'm trying to. Okay, because I can picture that goal right at the end. I think it was Dele Alli who crossed to Kane, so that obviously knocks that one out. Oh dear! So who would have? Maguire wouldn't have been around then, not at all. Surely not. So Kyle Walker and so left back. Ooh.
Just double checking. I'm pretty sure that every single one of them still plays. There might be one I've got a doubt on. No, they all still play.
They all still play. Okay, so would Henderson be one of those? Henderson was possibly there, was he?
Henderson was not involved. No,
was not involved. Okay. No. All right. A lot of dead air here, I'm afraid.
Well, I'll give you a clue, right? The centre back is probably best known for being at Man U.
So, would that have been who was the guy who always made the funny faces? They caught him at the wrong angle.
Right, yeah, I know who you're thinking of. You're thinking of Phil Jones, aren't you?
Phil Jones.
Plays in Italy now.
Plays in Italy now. So who's Italy? Tamora is obviously in Italy, but no, go on.
Chris Smalling.
Oh, Chris Smalling at Roma, of course. Yeah.
Well, the left back was actually linked with a move to Man U in the transfer window.
What, just gone?
Yeah.
No, go on. Again.
A bit of a rogue one, Ryan Bertrand.
Oh, never have got that. Was he associated with Manchester United, was he? Was he at Southampton, I think? Was...
He was linked for a move, aye.
Bertrand, well, I imagine he must only have half a dozen caps. Yeah, he really picked some stinkers here, haven't he, John?
Oh, this was the other John, this one.
Yeah.
Aye. Now, the midfielder, I'm just going to double check in terms of how many caps he have, because this might maybe help out. So for England, 7 caps between 2012 and 2017.
2012-2017. And we're looking at central midfield, are we?
Yeah.
Not there.
Roy, most known for being at West Brom.
That was the goalkeeper that I was talking about, wasn't it? No, go on, put me out of my misery.
Jake Livermore.
I've done a podcast recently where, he moved in the in the transfer window, didn't he?
He moved to Watford, yeah.
Yeah. He must have done it again, must have only have had about three caps, I think.
Yeah, seven caps, I was like,
yeah, seven caps.
Pretty sure he must have played left wing, and he's still in the squad. Well, he's still relatively young, but
he would have been... next.
Yeah.
Next one. Was Rashford in on that?
Yeah, Rashford was, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the last one is an early favourite, probably. I'm trying to think. What would I say? He's at Brighton just now.
James Milner?
Oh, the other one. It's English.
No, go on.
Adam Lallana.
Adam Lallana. Wow. Yeah, what a team.
But yeah. The only one out in the world, you've got Walker and Rashford are the two that are still in, and Ross Kane, obviously, the theory, in this squad, and that's brought from 6 years ago. Right,
did I get one there? Was that Rashford? Do I get that one?
Yeah, Rashford, yeah. Yeah, that's all right. Don't worry about it. Just a bit of fun. Now, this one might be easier. John, again, this is from John. He asked you to come up with a six-a-side team from Euro 96 and Euro 2020, seeing as, well, obviously, England and Scotland both played each other in the groups.
Yeah. A six-a-side team. Yeah. Okay. Should he have told me this prior to this?
Yeah, maybe should have, but he's a bit sneaky like that. He didn't do it. And I'm probably the same.
Is this a combined or an England one?
Yeah, combined, yeah. Combined. From England, yeah.
Okay. Thoughts? Blimey, so we'd have Seaman or Pickford.
Yeah.
Ooh, wow. Okay, well, let's... what formation are we playing? Two at the back. Well, I guess we'd have... See, I'm always drawn to Euro 96 just because it was that era for me. So I'd have Adams. And you've got Pierce as well.
Yeah, I think Tony Adams would be good at sets aside, I think.
Yeah, yeah, he'd distribute everyone everywhere. Stuart Pearce for a penalty. You go up front. There's this debate, isn't there? Kane or Shearer? You'd have to say Shearer because he's got the most... But he's got the most Premier League goals. But I think that's just to even it up by having... We'll have Kane in there.
I think Kane would probably be better at sets aside. He'd get more involved more with us. Shearer would just be like hanging up.
Yeah,
like the edge of the D.
Ball's played around on the floor more in six aside, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean,
rather than Shearer with his head trying to get it in on those 3 foot goals. I haven't chosen. Who do I have between Seaman or Pickford? Ooh, I'm going to go Seaman because I'm Arsenal. I've met him. So I've got two more. Who could we have? I mean, from that, although he didn't have the ultimate of tournaments, Jack Grealish, kind of what he is now, I guess you can't really bring him in because it wasn't the most amazing of tournaments for him. He's kind of progressed on from there. Let's put Bellingham in. Because he was in... In the Euro 2020 final. So that leaves us with Seaman, Adams, Pearce, Bellingham, Kane up front. So,
I mean, there's a natural one from an outsider's point of view.
Go on,
that scored the goal in Euro 96. No, I didn't want to mention it.
Oh, yeah. Well, do you reckon he would fit in there? Jamie, you're talking Jamie Redknapp, aren't you? Gaza. I guess. Obviously, he's got his roots in both countries, hasn't he, Gazza? Yeah, let's go with that. Seaman, Adams, Pierce, Bellingham, Gazza, Kane. There's a six aside.
Seaman, Adams, Pierce, Bellingham, Gazza, Kane. Yeah. And this one, I was going to do this where it was like five players, but I'll do it as three players. So out of the two squads that have been called up for the game between England and Scotland, if you were to replace three of the England starting lineup, now obviously we don't know what the lineup is, but expected lineup, what three Scotland players would you take? Would you put in the England lineup?
Do you know what? I'm going to have to quickly look at the Scotland squad. I haven't looked at it properly, if you don't mind.
What is it all?
This Scotland squad. There is, yeah, three players. I accept the cookies. Okay, right. I mean, Andrew Robertson obviously is Liverpool captain. I'm thoroughly good player, isn't he? Kieran Tierney, I've got a lot of respect for. Obviously, he's moved now from Arsenal. I think I'd be putting Kieran Tierney in.
Disappointed that he left Arsenal from, like, being an Arsenal fan. Like, or I think he just doesn't fit Arteta's system.
I think that's what it's come down to now, hasn't it? And obviously, Zinchenko is there as cover for that side of things as well. I mean, he came from Celtic, didn't he, with a massive buzz around him. He had a great couple of few seasons. I think he picked up an injury. And unfortunately, just hasn't really forced his way back in. But I think he's a great player. Scott McTominay, I mean, is your Man United player, I think, isn't he? Although he's...
out of favour just now, but...
Yeah, I was going to say Ten Hag has kind of put the kibosh on him a little bit, along with Jadon Sancho. It's not a sort of pleasant situation there in that respect. I mean, are we talking who would I replace as well in the England side? I'd take Conor Gallagher out of the England team and bring in Scott McTominay.
Robertson for Chilwell, would it be?
Yeah, I guess it would be. Yeah, Robertson for Chilwell. Which leaves us one more. Do I want Kieran Tierney? Who else have we got up front? His strikers. Oh, I have to be honest, I don't. Adams. I can't substitute any of the strikers. I have to be honest, with the greatest of respect. So maybe I do have to go back to Kieran Tierney. What goalkeepers?
Angus Gunn is the number one just now. But...
So let's take Angus Gunn over Sam Johnston.
Right, okay. Right, no worries. Aye. Right. and finally, what is your prediction for the game?
It's going to be an interesting one, and I think it will be sort of, the outcome will be based on obviously our games against Ukraine and Cyprus respectively, as well as said. You're on a high at the moment. There's no disputing that. The results that you've had, I think it's going to be a bit of a blood and thunder game, which is what we want.
Yeah.
I think this might be a case of you'll go ahead again, I think, like you did in the last game. But I think it may end in a draw.
It could well do. I mean, I think probably if you go back to your 2020 in terms of when we played you, obviously, the 0-0 draw, I think that was the start of us showing under Clark that we potentially we could compete with some of the big boys. We've had some decent results against likes of Denmark and Spain.
Yeah.
Obviously, this is a friendly, so we'll see what happens. But thanks for coming on, Russell, again. It's always a pleasure having you on.
No, appreciate you inviting me on. I hope my voice held out enough for you. It's been going at points.
That's all right. I just wait till after the two games coming up, your voice will be gone completely.
Oh, yeah, more than likely.
Right, okay, well, cheers, all the best, Russell, and we'll have you back on again in future. Okay.
Look forward to it. Cheers.
Cheers, Russell.
You're listening to the Scottish Football Forums podcast.
Right, okay, so that was a good wee segment. We have from Russell there in terms of how he thinks England will do. Right, quiz questions for you guys, okay, on the back of it. So this fixture obviously is to celebrate 150 years of the SFA. 10 years ago, there was a fixture to celebrate 150 years of the English FA. The score was 3-2 to England. Do you remember who scored the goals for Scotland?
Was that what that game was for? The one we went down to Wembley at 3-2. Is that what that was? Was that from the 150th birthday of the English FA?
Mm-hmm.
Honestly, mate, I went to that game. I could not have told you that.
I could tell you the goal scorers, Neighbour James/Jimmy Morrison. He became known as after that goal, and Kenny Miller, because I specifically remember Kenny Miller's goal because I sat at half time saying, look, Kenny Miller just has to call it a day now. He's absolutely done at this level. And then sent Gary Cahill for a hot dog and scored that goal. And all of a sudden, I absolutely adored Kenny Miller again. So,
that goal was extraordinary. I mean, let's not forget that was when Gary Cahill had just won the Champions League with Chelsea. Yeah. And I think they won the Premier League and all. And he, as you said, he sent up for a fucking bovril, by the way. You know, see you later, and rifled in. Great goal. So Jimmy Morrison's goal was great, I know.
Absolute howler. Was it Joe Hart that was in goals?
It was Joe Hart. Right, next question. I asked Russell who the England goalkeeper was in the 2014 game at Parkhead. Who was the Scotland keeper?
David Marshall.
Yep. I mean, this is the podcast here. Like, usually I do these quiz questions and it's like blank looks and wild guesses.
Was it Marshall? It was Marshall. My sexy aftershave friend. I tell you that one, didn't I? When we met him and I told him I loved him and all that, and I went to give him a kiss in the cheek, but he's like fucking 6'5" or something like that. So, and I'm fucking 5'8", right? So I couldn't go up to his cheek, and I ended up kissing his neck, and it was pretty hot. his aftershave, man, was fucking brilliant, man. You can tell he was on 20 or 30 grand a week with that. Where was he? Derby and Hull and all that. Because he smelled incredible.
He wasn't buying that Essence stuff where it's remakes of Hugo Boss, was he?
He was not getting a 20 quid bottle of duty free, by the way.
Right, okay. This is one that the other John has stole shamelessly from the Hampden Roar podcast. And it's complete the starting lineup. Right? So the game in question is a 2-2 game at Hampden. Right, 2017. So I asked Russell to complete the lineup. He struggled a bit, I'll be honest with you. I'm going to ask you guys now, based on so far, I mean, Ewan seems to be dynamite at these other questions. We'll see how he is with this one and the rest of these as well, okay? So I'm going to start with a blank, which is a goalkeeper. Do you remember who was a goalkeeper Craig in Gordon. The 2017 that was Craig, game?
Craig Gordon.
Right, okay, that's fine. And then we've got another blank.
Centre back was Sierney played.
Christoph Berra.
Yep.
Berra played.
Berra, yep.
Mulgrew.
Who was the other centre back? Yep, there we go. That's brilliant.
What a back three that was. Holy shit.
It was a 3-4-2-1.
Yeah.
Right. The blank at right wing back.
The world, the most handsome guy in Scottish football, Akechi Anya.
Anya.
What's that?
Aye, okay.
I'm joking.
Aye, it was aye.
Was that aye? Was that Anya aye?
Aye. Yep. We've got James Morrison. We've got Scott Brown. Stuart Armstrong. Blank.
Oh, he's a product of Livingston's Academy. Mr. Robert Snodgrass.
Snodgrass.
Correct, aye. And then Lee Griffiths, look at that. Maybe a bit unfair because you was like 3 years, but I reckon you would have probably done it by himself, to be honest. Well done to Dave and George for taking part.
Sure. Aye, well, but I mean, you said name the starting 11, when actually we only named about three the starting 11.
Aye, because it was fill in the blanks.
Oh, fill in the blanks, was it? Right,
aye, okay. Aye.
Got you, aye, sorry.
Okay. Right, so Scotland obviously qualified for Euro 96 and Euro 2020. We asked Russell to come up with a six-a-side team between the two squads, so the two England squads. So we're going to do the same, a six-a-side team from the two Scotland squads from 96 and 2020, which I know for probably all three is quite tough because you probably never did. Would you even have seen Euro 96 any years?
I was five. I would have been five when...
Three, mate. Three.
In fact, I would have been four at Euro 96, about to turn five. So,
well, look, as a good blue nose, is that the competition that Ali McCoy scored against Switzerland then?
Yeah, would that Ali McCoy would have been a
Ali the striker. That would
be six aside, he'd score goals for fun, man.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
who would be your choice of goalkeeper?
Was it Gorham that was in goals for Euro 96?
Leighton Gorham, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then right. You've got for us, it was Marshall. Aye. One of the,
got to
one
be
of
the goalie,
two.
Eh? It's got to be the goalie. Aye.
Gorham, aye.
Right, okay. Who else would you have?
Defenders, Robertson. Because, I mean, six-a-side, isn't it? You know, I'm always reluctant to play centre-backs in a five or a six-a-side team.
I'd go Tierney, more all-rounder.
Suppose I. Right, Tierney, we'll go Tierney.
I'd go Tierney and Colin Hendry just to kick folk.
I don't know if Colin Hendry would be the greatest at six-a-side, would he? It'd be like Begbie and Trainspotting.
Aye, but you need the mad cunt like him.
So Gorham Tierney. I'd go for Gary McAllister next.
Gary Mack. Hold on. Aye, what if there's a penalty? Right, Billy Gilmore got to be in there. He's five. He's cage football, isn't he? Six aside, five aside. Perfect for that kind of game.
Even on a six-a-side pitch, you'd have John McGinn in there because he'd still manage to make a yard with that arse.
Aye. I think that's pretty... I mean, so what, are we good with that?
Well, let's see. I think we've got maybe named it right. So we've got Gorham as a definite, Tierney as a definite, McCoys as a definite, Billy Gilmore, McAllister as a maybe. Is he in?
I'm taking Gary Mack out because he would miss the pens.
That's a fair point. And the reason why I'm thinking about McAllister is more for the dark side of the game, Josh.
Well, true. We'll get Begbie if he's spotting for that.
Has Hendry got in? Or was that just a kid on one?
I'd put him in.
He's a big horrible bastard. Get him in.
Right, okay. And then...
McGinn's
going to be in there.
McGinn, right, okay. And obviously when we hear back the podcast, you'll be the England team. Right, okay, so that's good, we've got that sorted. Right, okay, what three players from the England team would you put in the Scotland team
at present or back there?
From the
current squads.
I don't know a lot of the England team.
You must know a wee bit about them, like in terms of seeing tournaments and stuff like that.
I'm trying to get that. Who's
their
strikers?
Was that Dave?
Is Wayne Rooney still playing?
James Maddison. I'd go for James Maddison. I'd go
James
for
Morrison.
James Maddison. I would go for Lewis Dunk, funnily enough.
These are some wild shouts. What, like Lewis Dunk, Maddison? I like Maddison. I thought there'd be better names that would go ahead. But who else would you go?
Kane, no.
Who?
Oh, of course, aye. Harry
Ryan Kane, did you say
that?
Oh, Harry Kane, aye, Harry Kane. That's getting on you, Ryan Kane. Right, okay. So that's your three. You as you go, Josh. Well, you don't know the squad, so there's no point.
No, I'll go for the mental three. I'll go Ray Parlour, Ricky Lambert, and Matt Letizia.
Right, okay. Ewan, who would you go for out the current squad, England squad, if you pick three of them?
Foden. He's an outrageously good player. Saka, another one. Kane, probably. Saka or Rashford.
It
shows how good we are in midfield that none of us have picked Jude Bellingham that just moved to £100 million if we ever did.
Generally forgot about Jude Bellingham, to be honest.
Saka.
In seriousness, right. John,
you forgot earlier about Kieran Tierney.
In seriousness, I would go Saka and Bellingham and probably Grealish.
Right, okay. That's fine. Right, we'll finish up with the higher lower. So you know how I like to be higher or lower. You've all got a chance, 50-50 on this one, right? So England squad, Scotland squad that's been named for this Tuesday. So Kieran Tierney has 39 caps at this point prior to the Cyprus game. Does Trippier have more or less caps? Ewan, would you think higher or lower?
Ooh. I'm going to say lower.
Right, so Ewan is going lower. Dave, what do you think? Does Trippier have more caps or less caps than Tierney? You'll go lower.
I think it's going less.
Okay.
I don't think there'll be Josh. A lot in it, though.
I think Tierney's got more caps because is that Trippier? There was only a spell where he was like the top kind of right back, wasn't there?
Right, okay, so well done to all three of you. You're completely wrong. Trippier has 42 caps.
I don't think there would be a lot in it.
He's always involved under Southgate. Even sometimes he's played left back for them. So he's got more. Right, okay, next up we have the handsome Stuart Armstrong. Stuart Armstrong has 42 caps. Is that more or less than Declan Rice?
More.
It's got to be more, aye. Because Declan Rice isn't that old, is he?
Yeah. Thinking he's...
And how many caps has he got? Is that Ireland caps, John, or is it England caps?
I like that one.
Just
like
to
that
clear,
one.
That, right, okay. clear that up. Aye.
So you're both saying Armstrong's higher. Dave, what do you think?
I think Rice is more.
You think Rice is more, right, okay. So... Stuart Armstrong has 42 caps, as I said. Declan Rice has 43 caps.
Jeez.
Dave, well done to you. Right. Shea Adams has 23 caps for Scotland. Does Trent Alexander-Arnold have more or less caps than Shea Adams? Start with you, Josh.
Trent Alexander-Arnold's got how many?
I'm not telling you that one, I told you. I mean, if I tell you that, you'll get the answer.
Sorry, how many sheets?
Shea Adams has got 23.
Right, and Trent Alexander-Arnold
has more or less.
Trent Alexander-Arnold's got more, I think, because he's Aye, they all love him, didn't they? Aye, I would say Mayor.
Right, okay. Ewan?
I'm going less. He's
less.
Yeah. See, now that you've been talking about the amount of games that Trippier's played.
I like that. You've put a wee bit of thought into what it could be, Dave.
Logic.
I've got the same thought process as you, and I'm going to go for Shea Adams.
Because Kyle Walker's played a load of games as well, and there.
Aye, exactly. So Shea Adams will get 23 caps. Trent Alexander-Arnold will get 20. So, right. The next one up, Scott McKenna. Scott McKenna has 29 caps. Is that more or less than Phil Foden? Dave?
I think Foden's got more.
You think Foden's got more?
I think Foden's got more, I know. Because he's. Foden's got more? He's
how many caps was it McKenna had?
29.
Was there no spell Foden was dropped after his antics over in Iceland or something like that? Him in Greenwood. I'm going less.
Right, okay. So, Dave and Josh went that Foden's get more. Ewan is going Foden less. Ewan's correct. Foden's get 25 caps. And then last but not least, we have Ryan Jack on 16 caps. Does Ben Chilwell have more or less caps than Ryan Jack? Josh?
Well, Ryan Jack's got how many?
16.
Right. And what was his name, sorry?
Ben Chilwell.
Right. I mean this from the bottom of my heart. I have no idea who that is. So, Ryan Jack, Mayor. I honestly, John, I have no idea who that is. Who does he play for?
Chelsea. He played at Leicester with Brendan Rodgers.
Did you see left back there?
Left back.
Yeah.
Keep an eye out for him. Must be a big name.
Dave, what do you think?
I think it's Chilwell.
You think it's Chilwell? Chilwell's got more? You say? Dave?
Yeah, sorry.
Right, okay. Ewan?
Chilwell,
right, okay. So Ryan Jack has 16 caps, and the player that Josh doesn't know, Ben Chilwell, has 18 caps.
There
we go. Right, bit of fun there, bit of fun. Worked out all right. Some of yous went higher, some of yous went lower. Some surprising ones though there, I would have said. The biggest surprise was Declan Rice, I think, with 43 caps. But
see, I was trying to think of it as you typically have 10 international games a year. So how long's he actually been involved in the international setup? But there you go.
I think a lot of them, I think one thing to kind of bear in mind and all is that you're talking about you're talking about Euro 2020, you're talking about
the World Cup
in Qatar, and they've consistently got to the latter stages of those tournaments. So even at that, you're picking up an extra 3 or 4 caps a player.
So it'd be a bit of fun to finish up with. I think that was all the quiz questions that I had. I could come up with more, but I might come up with more next week when we're doing a proper preview from a Scotland point of view. Know that we'll have much time because we'll be recording probably Monday, the games on Tuesday, but we'll put
give us up, give us a few more quiz questions about Ben Chilwell, John. Ben Chilwell and who else? I know who Phil Foden is. A lot of them I know, but I mean Ben Chilwell.
Right here we go. Right, I'm going to do a quiz, right? Based on you being here, and I'm guessing you'll be here as well. That's Monday, right? But let's do this, right? You and Dave, you're only taking part if Josh can't come up with the answer, which means we could be here till God knows what time, right? Jordan Pickford plays for what club?
Everton.
Are you okay? Sam Johnson.
No, you made that up. That's not a real person. Sam Johnson. Honestly, I have no idea. No idea. Southampton. Southampton.
She Brentford.
No.
Bristol Palace.
Well done, Ewan. No, it's Ewan got it. It's Crystal Palace.
Palace.
Right, Josh, Aaron Ramsdale.
Southampton.
Arsenal.
Aaron Ramsey, I thought it was, I know the guy that, what was his name?
He's Welsh. Ramsdale.
Ramsdale.
Yeah, this could be a show in itself. See, we'll be doing, if we do the Christmas quiz this year, it might just be you, George. We'll make sure, right, we've covered you don't know Ben Chilwell, but you do now, you'll not forget his name.
Chilwell.
Right, Levi, Levi Colville.
Oh, God, you're taking the piss now. That's John. That's not that. You're taking the piss. That's not real.
Chelsea, right? Why is
Chelsea?
Levi Colwell.
Colwell, aye.
Is it Chelsea?
That is aye. Dave, I've got no doubt in your knowledge and Ewan's knowledge on this one. just Josh. Just go. right, Guehi, which is Guehi.
Sometimes I wish this was a video podcast. Was that a player?
As I
sent. Oh, it's a brand of boot.
Oh,
it's an aftershave. Dave, but you're doing play. Aye, as I. Aye. Toby Maguire.
It's Spider-Man.
Harry Maguire.
Marvel.
Harry Maguire. I know Harry Maguire who he is. I know
right,
Harry Maguire.
Tomori.
No.
It's Tomori.
Well done, Dave. Kieran Trippier.
Aye, yeah, know him. Aye. Is it
who?
Newcastle?
It is, aye. Kyle Walker.
Yep. Is it Manchester City? Aye, Man City.
It is, aye. You know Trent Alexander-Arnold, who we spoke about earlier. Jude Bellingham, you obviously know him.
Real Madrid.
Conor Gallagher. Yeah. Conor Gallagher.
Chelsea.
Yep. I need to look this one up as to which one he went to. Jordan Henderson.
Aletif. Back.
How do you know that? Jordan Henderson went to Aletif, but you don't know.
It's the same team that Jack Hendry.
James
Maddison.
Leicester.
Sutton.
He was at Leicester.
He was at Leicester, so close. Calvin Phillips.
Leeds.
Was it Leeds?
Man,
somewhere else now.
I only know that because I used to have a brother-in-law that was a Leeds fan.
Declan Rice.
West Ham.
He was at West Ham.
It's clear to see Josh doesn't watch Sky Sports News, eh?
I don't, mate. Honestly, I don't.
It's quite the fashion, in a way. It's quite the fashion. He's at Arsenal now.
Right.
Easy.
It was hard.
His brother plays the Scottish football.
What's that?
His brother plays the Scottish football.
Aye.
Is it Easy's name?
Is it Easy?
Do you know the funniest part of that, John? Right, see how I said back to you, no, it was hard, right? I actually did think initially until Dave halfway through when Dave said Crystal Palace, I honestly thought you were asking me if it was easy.
I know. It was my pronunciation. If it had been you and asking the question, you'd have got it. Right, you know Foden and Grealish, don't you? Where they're at?
Yeah, I know them. Man City.
Aye. Harry Kane.
Tottenham. Oh, Bayern Munich.
Right, okay. Eddie
Nketiah?
No. Arsenal.
Yeah. Marcus Rashford.
Man U.
Yep. Bukayo Saka.
Arsenal.
Aye. Callum Wilson.
Southampton.
Newcastle.
Aye, Newcastle, they played.
I genuinely pay money just to watch Josh's facial expression when you read out some of these names. Right?
this might become a new weekly feature. Guess this. Right, okay. Keep it fresh. See, thinking in defeat there, that was something different.
That's it, aye. Right.
Aye, we'll not do the Scotland squad because I think you know them.
No, of course I fucking know. Of course I fucking know the Scotland squad, John.
I'm not going to test anyone in the Cyprus squad because we know we'd get Gogic and that would be it.
No, right, but look, ask yourself this, though, right? See if I whipped out the fucking Germany squad right now and I went through every single player, would you be able to name off the cuff every player's team?
I reckon I could have a good bash at it, aye.
You'd have a right bash. I've had a right bash at it. I've got probably about half of them there. But a lot of them, right, and this is the key thing here, I don't watch any English football, so I've got no reason to know who these players are, or because all of their players are always based in the English Premier League, just about every player.
You don't play FIFA, or that?
No, mate, I've no, but I don't play English Premier League FIFA, I just play like Rangers and that.
Rangers?
FIFA.
Aye.
Just plays Old Firm.
Aye, just win every single game.
Or easy. Or easy, sorry.
Easy,
aye. Right, okay. So I think that'll wrap things up. As I say, we're going to do a preview of sorts of England game next week. This has kind of started the hype for it, even though the Cyprus game is more important. So Dave, thank you for coming on. Good job last week as well with the women's special. Very well done.
Pleasure as always, John. Thank you very much.
George, a pleasure as always.
Pleasure, mate. Hopefully when we get on next week, we'll be celebrating 3 points against Cyprus and looking forward to pumping England on Tuesday night in a friendly match and hoping that the other results go our way and we end up qualifying. I mean, how good would that be? Qualifying at Hampden. You know, everyone in Hampden that night, results go our way, we qualify and we beat England to boot. That would be toffee.
And you see Ben Chilwell.
Chilly boy, aye. Chilly.
Josh, you actually look a little bit Ben Chilwell, like. He's going to be Googling him when he comes off this.
Nae wonder, I don't know who he is, man. He must be an ugly bastard then.
And Ewan, good for you to be on talking about something different to Livingston with the Scotland chat. So nice to have you back on.
Oh, pleasure as always. Pleasure as always.
And before we go, I should plug the fact the latest Tartan Army magazine is out. So you can check it out at, let me just double check and make sure I get the right link. TartanArmyMagazine.com. So that's your best bet. The other John has got some cracking articles, tribute to Craig Brown, tribute to Gordon McQueen, interview with Christy Murray as well. There's articles as well from our good friend Michael, Celtic fan. He has got an article with Stephen Rayside, who was on the Premiership preview at the start of the season, but there's loads on there. And also a nice link for next week. There's articles as well by Hazel Gilder, who will be our special guest next week, our first appearance on the podcast. So, good luck to Scotland for Friday, and we shall talk to you all next week. And happy football, obviously.